This is Jeff J. Brown, China Rising Radio, Sinoland, Seek Truth from Facts Foundation, the China Writers Group, and the Bioweapon Truth Commission. Really excited to have Robert Van Rocks on the show today. He is a proud member of the China Writers Group. He has been on the China Rising Radio Sinoland show several times. We're actually friends. We've met a couple of times in Zhuhai, where he lives in China. And so I consider him a friend and a valuable colleague. And he has some very exciting news today about China that he wants to share with you. And I'm excited for him to have the opportunity. So please welcome Robert Van Rocks to the show today and enjoy. I know you'll really like it.
Hey, Jeff. It's great to see you again and have a little chat. Hopefully this chat will go through. The audience is probably unaware that we've had numerous chats, and for one reason or the other, they kind of disappeared. So I do want to say a couple things. The first thing I want to say is congratulations on your move to Taiwan. And also, I've been watching some of your videos on some of the other channels. You're in a good circle of folk, let me tell you what. And I just want you to know that and let your audience know that as well. You are associating with some major players in the alternosphere, so to speak. As we're talking right now, the big news, of course, is Biden has stepped down. There's other questions you have, of course, and we'll cover the other questions. But I want to say a couple of things. The Biden presidency has been the most catastrophic, disastrous presidency in the history of the United States. Evidence is pointing clearly to the fact that he never ran anything, and he was just a sock puppet for a bunch of what I would like to refer to as prep school boys who never got the opportunity to be bitch slapped in the workplace. But that's just my personal opinion. One thing's for sure is this global wide fear that even I can experience in China, whether you're in Africa, South America, Europe, everybody is afraid of World War III. The guy and the people supporting him are hell-bent on starting World War III, thinking that it would never happen. As bad as he is, and as horrible as he is, I can tell you as a fact that here in China, people are looking forward to a Trump presidency, because nobody can be that inept. So if you're a Biden fan, you're probably going to hate me saying that. I'm sorry about that. But nuclear war is nothing to take trivially. And the last 4 years, 3.5 years, it has been. And that's a concern. Anyways, that being said, let's get into the question, shall we?
Question number one. Robert, you are an expert on China. Please give us a quick summary of where China is and where it's going, especially after the third plenum session, which just ended. Here is the preamble of the final plenum text. Quote, the decision adopted by the plenary session outlines strategic measures for further comprehensive deepening reform, closely centering on the theme of promoting Chinese-style modernization. It is a programmatic document guiding further comprehensive deepening reform on the new journey, and fully reflects the historical initiative of the Party Central Committee with Comrade Xi Jinping as the core to improve and develop the socialist system with Chinese characteristics and promote the modernization of the national governance system and governance capacity. The decision adheres to the correct political direction, focuses on grasping the major institutional and mechanism issues that need to be resolved in promoting Chinese-style modernization. It provides a clear theme and focuses on key priorities. The measures proposed are practical and feasible. It serves as a general mobilization and overall plan for promoting comprehensive deepening of reform in the new era and on the new journey, and will undoubtedly provide strong momentum and institutional guarantees for Chinese-style modernization, end of quote. In practical terms, please tell us what these four key statements mean. One, socialist system with Chinese characteristics. Two, modernization of the national governance system and governance capacity. Three, comprehensive deepening of reform in the new era and on the new journey. And four, institutional guarantees for Chinese-style modernization.
Well, actually, before I get into this, let me say a couple of words. China is an ancient society. China has been around at least for 6,000 years, but we know that it lasted far longer than that, well into the Neolithic. And during that entire time, China has seen nations come and seen nations go. They saw the Greeks come and the Greeks go. They saw the Assyrians come and the Assyrians go. They've seen the Sumerians come and the Sumerians go. They've seen the Persians come and the Persians go. The Romans come and the Romans go. The British Empire come and the British Empire go. The Portuguese come and the Portuguese go. The United States coming and the United States is going. It's an enormous ancient civilization. And because of these comings and goings, they can pretty much predict through centuries of experience what to expect. So the last number of decades has been a good run for China, and they're doing okay. They're doing really good right now. But now they have to change their policies, because external influences, the United States, and its proxies, UK, Israel, European Union, a bunch of tiddlywinks, they're all living some kind of fantasy world, I would imagine, and they want to take care of their own individual problems. Depending on who's running the United States, and I'm conflicted. I don't think anybody's running the United States. There's figureheads that kind of slide in and out. There's the Biden figurehead, which is nothing more than a sock puppet or a placeholder, you know, like those placeholders you put in books. You have Donald Trump, who talks a large amount of things, but we know from his last presidential experience that he had so many neocons in his administration that set up all the wars we're currently observing and enjoying right now. We also know what China thinks about him. China pretty much says that he's caused all kinds of problems and trying to get famine and launch bioweapons in China. You may not agree with it, but China believes that, and that's what matters. Since we're talking about China, let's just talk about China. That's what they think. Imagine you're sitting there in your China, and you're like, well, we know Biden says one thing and does another thing, so he's a liar. We know Trump says all kinds of stuff, but he has no control over everything. With Trump, it's choppy waters. With Biden, it's polluted waters. What do you want to choose? Choppy waters, polluted waters? Who knows? They don't know. But if you're in China, you would say both are bad. So the only thing that's constant, remains constant, of course, is who's ever pulling the strings, the powers, behind the puppets. The Wizard of Oz. The guy behind the curtain. So, but we do know about China. And China is not a reactive nation. They are a proactive nation. Now, the United States is a reactive nation. A weather balloon goes up, lots of chatter, 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 lots of news, 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 and all of a sudden, missiles are fired. That's a reactive nation. China is a proactive nation. They think 10, 20, 30, 50, 100, 500 years in advance. And so we had the last session, and we're talking at all, and they're all talking about changing priorities. A change in priorities is a change in emphasis. So suppose in your house, you are concentrating on your career. You are doing everything to get skills, dress well, buttering up to various higher management. You are doing everything to work on your career. Then suddenly there's a change of priorities. Now you're working on selling your house, fixing the house up so you can sell it at a profit. It's a change in priorities. It doesn't mean that your life stops. Your life continues. It's just the emphasis that you place on things change. So the emphasis now on China is more self-directed. They have achieved, and in this last meeting, have laid out targets. And trust me, guys, I've been watching China for long enough to know they're going to hit the targets. So don't worry about that. These targets are on economic independence from the West, so that if the West does tariffs, if the West does financial attacks, if the West does bioweapon attacks, if the West does whatever attacks, because they've been throwing the kitchen sink at China for the longest time. Well, no matter what they do, China just brushes it off. Because China, it won't affect China. About a week or so ago, we had the CloudStrike fiasco. CloudStrike is a software system that supposedly protects your computer from malware. Well, if you look into the code, it basically gives itself and its owners, and if you check into who owns CloudStrike, you'll know it's the U.S. government, access to your computer. And so with CloudStrike, it all went down because they really messed up. And I'm going to say the timing of CloudStrike turning all the computers and everything offline for 24 hours at the time of Joe Biden's mysterious disappearance is telling. But the point that I want to make here is not the reason why CloudStrike went down. I want to talk about it didn't affect China at all. It didn't affect Russia at all, because they don't use American injected software. Oh, sure, there are people who run Windows here in China all the time. Chinese Windows is not Western Windows. Took the software, hacked into the software, deleted all the NSA backdoors, deleted all the updates for more improved backdoors, got rid of all that. So Chinese Windows work just fine. But the western windows with all the back doors collapsed. A car runs on gasoline, doesn't run on corn. So what China is planning on doing is cutting off these types of systems that can be used to hurt China, like SWIFT. SWIFT is the financial system that you transfer money with. They said, we're going to cut off SWIFT from you. China says, fuck, I don't care. We have our own system. You use our system, and we'll approve you. If you don't use our system and you want to use them SWIFT, we're not going to do business with you, and that's it. So that's what's going on. Pretty simple, don't you think? So there's really four major keys that the Chinese are going to use to implement this. They are economic stability, so nobody can go ahead and pull the rug out from under China. Like George Soros tried to collapse the Chinese banking system. China fought them and he couldn't do it. So they're not going to allow that to happen. They're going to focus more on technical innovation. If you think China is just blowing the socks out of the West right now in technical innovation, you ain't seen nothing yet. It's going from an 8. When you're turning the dial, you can hear the humming of the amplifier as they're turning it up, because it's about to get real. They're going to focus more on social welfare internally. They're going to get the lowest groups of people out of poverty completely. Absolutely. They're going to clean it up so everybody in China gets a piece of the pie. You may not get the most delicious piece of the pie, but you will get a piece of the pie. So they're really working on that. And they're going to do something, and the word is sustainable development. Sustainable development. The West runs unsustainable development. You get gasoline, you put it in the car, gasoline is burned, you create smoke, and the car moves. That's unsustainable. You have to replace the gas. Sustainable means you put solar panels. The solar panels run the car. As long as the sun's out, the car runs. That's sustainable. China wants to emphasize more sustainable activities, sustainable technologies, and things like that. We've all heard about that, but being here in China, you can see it. You see the trees, you see the flowers planted everywhere. The roads are quiet. The roads are quiet because it's EVs everywhere. I mean, not one or two, I mean damn near 30-40% of the cars. All the bikes are electric. And I live in tiny Tianzhou, okay? Okay, I got places in Zhuhai, but you know, tiny Tianzhou, I mean, the rural sections are just, it's okay. So they're concentrating on the domestic economy, making sure that it's immune from foreign interference. They're going to be continuing to address the social issues. Not a knee-jerk reaction either, but long-term systemic issues that result in various unhappiness. Some of that might be related to the retirement years of people. Some of it might be related to other issues. But they're going to concentrate on that. They're also going to... Look, the way I can describe it is they want to enhance the well-being of its citizens. They're not trying to get the GDP to be greater than the United States GDP. The United States GDP is all inflated nonsense. It has no real bearing on anything. What they want to do, the well-being of Chinese people right now is better than the West, but they want to make it much better, like gargantuan. So the difference is going to be truly substantive. So the idea here behind all of this is, while it's been a focus in the past, It's a renewed focus with an injection of importance and stability, focusing on self-reliance at all levels. United States wants to cut off international trade. China won't have to worry about it because they're self-reliant. United States wants to call the banks to collapse, the RMB, the yuan to collapse. China has systems, but will have even more robust systems to make sure that no nation, no oligarch can ever do that. And they want to achieve sustainable, repeatable goals at all levels to foster the well-being of the people. Now, in terms of the global impact, all this is internal to China. All this is internal to China. But in regards to the rest of the world, there will be implications. A more self-sufficient China means it doesn't rely that much on external nations. If some nation is being bad to it, it can cut off all trade and see what they're going to do. These nations can't even make pencils for themselves, don't know how to make shoelaces. Lord knows they hasn't been a factory making aspirin in these nations for decades. They'll be self-reliant. If China cuts them off, and China will have that ability. China has that ability now. And so China is making its systems independent of the West, redundant in case of attack. They're going to be dynamic, meaning they can alter and change like water. Systems that are not rigid. Systems that are flexible, like bamboo. Storm hits bamboo, the bamboo lays down, then the storm passes, bamboo stands right back up again. The West designs everything like a tall tree, like these big forests of tall trees. And they're impressive. They're tall, beautiful. Big bad storm comes once every century, bam, they're dead. Those trees never coming back. So China is really working on improving its supply lines and specifying much more effort on international relations. This is true diplomatic efforts, true diplomatic efforts, not the American system of you do as I say or I'll bomb you. You do as I say or I will punish you. Oh, and by the way, I don't like this about what you're doing, and I don't like that about what you're doing, and then what about this about what you're doing? No, China doesn't do any of that. China says, you want to trade with us? Fine. I don't care what's going on in your country. I wish your people were happy, but that's not my concern. My concern is trading with you. You want to trade? Fine. You don't want to trade? Fine. But in these relationships, it's a mutual respect. China comes up to another country and says, I respect you as you are. You respect me as I am. Now, the West, the arrogance of Trudeau in Canada, where he showed disrespect to Xi Jinping, that video has been circulating around where Xi Jinping just told him, hey, this is not how we talk, this is not diplomacy. Where Xi Jinping snubbed former leader of Australia for his backstabbing. China, I'm not going to have any of that. And it's fostering pure diplomatic relationships. And if you're not on the game board, you'll not be shunned only by China, but you'll be shunned by all of the global South, the makers of most of the raw materials, most of the manufactured products, most of the medicines, most of day-to-day items, and the latest and greatest, highest technology will be prevented from you ever from having access to. They won't allow you to have it, so you better get your act together. And that's what's going on. So these efforts that China is focusing on internally, a strengthening, is going to really affect the international scene. It'll affect global markets. Consider what happens when China doesn't need to supplement its food supply with corn from the United States. Okay? It'll affect investment patterns. What happens when all the money is going to China and people don't want to invest in dying nations like those in Europe and those in the United States? And of course, geopolitical patterns. Geopolitical patterns have been a nightmare for quite some time. I would date them back to pre-Obama, but it really went off the rails. I mean, Trump was like this kid in a toy store breaking things, bull in a toy shop. But Biden, he's that fiasco. I mean, when it comes to being a bad leader, I mean, that is off the scale. Off the scale. So these meetings here, what's going on after this big meeting is a focus on internal development, which strengthens the avenues that are connected to the external world. It is a strategic recalibration that will strengthen the country's future trajectory and has a very large implication to the rest of the world. Most people will be watching, including myself, how these policies unfold. But knowing China as I do, I think they're going to unfold like a flower in the morning. And it will be splendid and splendiferous. And will have great impacts on the trade of other nations. For instance, Mexico with Brazil. All of these things are going to be affected. I can't help but feel very positive about this, and I'm kind of excited about it. To the average person, it's not a very interesting subject, but I think it's fascinating, and that's my personal opinion about this. It's really, really kind of exciting. You see, for the last 40-some years, we've known China as an outwardly focused nation connecting to the West. Whatever goes on within China has been kept hidden from us. We're told lies. Pictures have these filters known as the Chinese filter that makes things dark and gloomy. Outright lies are promoted and repeated endlessly until people just knee-jerk statements that, you know, us who live in China, we just scratch our head like, have you ever been to China to say something that ridiculous? But they just... So the point is that China has outwardly focused, but then from the Western side, you can't see in. They're not allowing you to see. It's like this painted up wall. You can't look over the fence. Whatever you do, don't look up in the fence. But China is now going to make the beautiful... China is actually very beautiful right now. I mean, it's stunning. It's hot blue skies, flowers everywhere. Flowers on every damn bridge, for God's sakes. just gorgeous. Quiet, quiet. I have yet to find a chemtrail in the sky in China. I've been living here 20 years. No chemtrails ever, ever. Go to the West, go to the United States, chemtrails all over the place. China, no chemtrails. I wonder why. All right, get on your tinfoil hat. But the point is, none of that's in China. Quiet, peaceful, nice, good. And the West doesn't even know about it. Now, China says, that's good, not good enough. We're going to make China, dress China up like you have not seen 5 years, 10 years down the road. United States is going to look like a like a civil war in Beirut, while China is going to look like an ornate palace from the Tang Dynasty. Or I'll use another dynasty perhaps, but it's just going to be really spectacular. And that's what's coming down the pipe, and it's exciting for me. This phase, this last meeting, is one that really says China has left its training wheels behind and now is getting rid of the bicycle that it was riding and is now graduating into a car. These analogies, if you can follow them. China is past these stages and entered a new stage, a very, very responsible stage. China has entered its adulthood. And the United States and the West are just feeble, old oligarchs on deathbeds. The world's going to be really exciting, I'll tell you what.
Question two. Please tell us about the amazing new bridge connecting the Pearl River Delta from Shenzhen to Zhongshan, across over to your side. Have you driven across it? How much does it cost? Have you been on the 55-kilometer Macau-Zhuhai-Hong Kong bridge? How much does it cost? How much are these bridges changing the economy and daily social life in Zhuhai?
Oh, man. First of all, that bridge that goes from Hong Kong to Zhuhai and Macau, it's damn impressive. In fact, I had a house. I lived in a penthouse that overlooked the bay. Bad move. If you ever decide to get a penthouse, don't get a penthouse. It's very overrated. But it was right there. So when the bridge crosses from the island, They made an artificial island that the bridge from Hong Kong goes to, and that's where customs is. And then from that island, there's another bridge that takes you to Macau. My house there, my back door was right there at the bridge. You can actually walk out from my back door to the bridge. Yeah, it's really something. Beautiful, beautiful. That island is big, it's got a big mall and whatever, but I haven't really seen any of the stores open up there. It's just this big empty mall right now. to understand what's going on, and they just opened another bridge, by the way, as you mentioned, they just opened another bridge that connects the Bao'an Airport, which is the north side of Shenzhen, to Zhongshan. Now, actually, I just bought a house there at that bridge. So I don't know what this theme is here, but I got a house right there at that bridge. I've seen photos of it. My house is, I got to go pick up the key next week to move into my house there, but they just constructed it. It's in a ghost city, by the way. That's what they call these things, you know, in the West. Oh, you see those groups of high-rise? That's a ghost city because nobody's living in it. They don't tell you that they build the buildings, then the people move in. They don't, like, occupy a place in tents, okay? You build the building first, then you move in. That's, and they call that a ghost city, but another nonsensical thing. Nevertheless, these, this bridge is pretty good. I don't know the cost and the details. I could go ask ChatGPT, and they'll tell me. But the important thing that you have to understand, and a lot of people don't, you think in terms of cities. Hong Kong, you've got Shenzhen, you've got Zhongshan, you've got Macau, you've got Zhuhai. Cities. No, that's not how the Chinese government thinks. They have the Pearl River Delta region. The Pearl River, by the way. All right, excuse me here. The Pearl River is the geographic area that represents Hong Kong, Shenzhen, Zhongshan, Zhuhai, and Macau. It's a geographic area. 300 million people. What's the population of the United States? 330 million? So the entire population of the United States is in this one area. Hong Kong, Shenzhen, Zhongshan, Zhuhai, Macau. Actually, I might be wrong. Maybe it's just 100 million. Anyways, it's a big, massive urban area. And so all these bridges are going up that's connecting like a spider web of all these city centers. You've got the Macau city center. You've got the Zhuhai city centers. Multiple centers. You've got the Zhongshan centers, but the Zhongshan city being the largest, of course. You've got Dongguan, which is north of Shenzhen, and you've got all, they're all being connected by these bridges. Roads serve a purpose. They improve communication, transport, and a degree of community. China is spending the time and making the effort to make this entire area into one super mega city. You've heard of mega cities. This is a super mega city. And it is coming along nicely. These bridges are impressive. Now, I'm going to have to say something here. Jeff, you've driven with me. You know what the ride is like here in China. It's amazing. I'm going to tell the audience here, it is spaghetti roads, I got to tell you. Spaghetti roads everywhere. And you can't go by without your app. You put that app there and it tells you where to go. And trust me. Now these apps, this app is connected to the lights. So on the app it tells you when the light's going to turn red, going to turn green, if there's an accident, what's going on, how long the accident will go on for. In color codes, you'll see what the traffic is and what isn't. You'll see all this stuff. It'll be truly, truly, it is truly, truly useful, but you can't go without it. Lordy, you can't go without it. And the other day, I went through a red light. Damn this thing. I'm pretty embarrassed about it, but I got made a mistake and I went through a red light, so I got 6 points. 200. I paid 200 and got 6 points. Not too happy about it. But, you know, you're being tracked. They know exactly who's going on and what's going on and everything. And I kind of messed up. These roads, though, are truly amazing. They are truly, truly amazing. Now, I want to... Have you heard about the latest rains? China, because of global warming, because of solar peak intensity, I don't quite know what, but the weather in China has been getting very extreme over the last couple of years. And so we've been having flood rates that are astounding and rainfall that is astounding. And so some of the older bridges, bridges that were built in the 1980s and 1990s, collapsed. And there was just one just the other day. A bunch of people got killed, the bridge collapsed, cars are floating in there, people are trying to rescue them. Horrific, horrific, horrific. So all this new infrastructure is coming around that's much better than the early stuff from the 1980s and 1990s. And so when I hear and see these videos, I'm pretty upset about that stuff, but climate is changing. And I can only imagine how bad it will be, not just the 1990 bridges that you see in China that seem to collapse under the weight of these strange winds and unusual rains, but also the United States, where most of the bridges were made in the 1930s. If this extreme weather hits the United States, and it will, it's going to be a dicey time for the United States to cope and to deal with it. Roads and bridges are something. Roads and bridges are something I like to think is underrated. We use them all the time. We don't think about them. We use them all the time. We don't think about them. China's got a network of sidewalks. Each sidewalk section has a granny and IE that cleans it. It's got a handicapped blind person with a walking stick area to walk on. They're shaded. There's also a bicycle superhighway built into it that's always paved. China has designed the sidewalks for people. Many times in the United States, you will go and you will see that they have entire communities, suburbs built up, no sidewalks, because it's designed around cars. That's fine if a gallon of gas is 5 cents. A gallon of gas comes $5, that's another story. But China has planted trees over these walking areas, has made it community property, and has made it so that it's a nice, pleasant area to stroll in. Those of you who have lived in, Jeff, I know you've been in Normandy. You know the importance of walking around in small towns and nice communities. I know you know that. It's one of the beauties of Europe. And anybody who's lived in Europe will attest to this. But people in the United States, we don't know that. We don't realize that. To us, our experience off the road is a truck stop at the side of the road with a McDonald's and a Shoney's and a Shakey's. Just big neon, big signs, paved areas, the smell of gas when you go out. That's it. It's the America. So roads are very important. Roads for people, roads for cars, roads for heavy equipment. And China is integrating these communities. Macau, Hong Kong, Shenzhen, all these communities are being integrated with roads. Over time, as I discussed in the other question, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, it'll be recognized as a mega city. As commerce and people move across these roads, communities spring up or reinforce. Just whether it's in Zambia or Algeria, as these places integrate along these BRIs, as these outlets, people start to thrive. Roads are an artery for thriving. And that's what's going on right now. So yeah, I've been on the Hong Kong Macau Bridge. They closed the ferry that went from Hong Kong to Zhuhai. You can still get a ferry from Hong Kong to Shenzhen and from Shenzhen to Zhuhai, but you can't get one directly to Zhuhai. That port is under renovation. It's going to be a big one by the time they're done. The bridge is really something else. It is really something else. And the new one that just went up over in my other house is really going to make a difference. It's certainly going to help our housing values. I do want to say a couple things about housing values. There's a lot of nonsense in the West. China's under economic collapse. It's got a big economic bubble, the housing bubble, blah, 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 blah. It is true in that my houses have all devalued. There's some issues on economics, prosperity because of the global geopolitical situation. Most of trade is related to Europe and the United States, and they're a total mess right now. So things are kind of trickling down and getting a little loosey-goosey. But that's a temporary setback. I don't know how temporary. It might be a week. It might be 2 decades, but it's temporary. China always, and the Chinese always look at long-term event cycles. They always do. So this construction of this Pearl River Delta hub is going to happen irregardless of whether the fluctuations of housing goes up or down or whatever. And that's something the people of the West can't understand. Have an opportunity, buy some property in China. You won't regret it. And that's kind of what's going on in my neck of the woods as far as the Pearl Delta River Hub and Zhuhai. And again, I'm sorry, I get off on all these crazy, crazy tangents.
Question 3. You are right across the border from Macau. Please tell us why Macau is so different than Hong Kong, as it has not been used as a color revolution platform by the West. Is it the history? The people? If Macau did not have any casinos, do you think that they would even bother with a border? How do mainland Chinese get into Macau, and how do Macanese get into mainland China? Are there people who commute on a daily basis back and forth?
Macau. Well, for those of you who are aware, Macau is much smaller than Hong Kong, and Hong Kong's small. Macau is really different than Hong Kong. For instance, they speak Portuguese, for instance. So the signs are in Portuguese and all this. And it's got a totally different feel for it, even though it's right there. I don't go to it that often. For the longest time, I had a 10-year multi-entry visa that I would go. I use it to go into Hong Kong and also into Macau. And I would go into Macau and pick up some Western food. I would pick up something we call Campbell's soups. Okay, and so I would get some Campbell's soups and some bagels and some things that it's not really all that popular here in China, and go back through the border. Macau, and of course I've got some friends of mine who actually live in Macau. One of my friends, his parents immigrated from China to Macau, 20, 30 years ago, something like that. When everybody was trying to immigrate to the United States, they immigrated to Macau. Now, they all get a living wage. Every single one of them gets something like 3,000 RMB a month just to exist. You can live in Macau and not work at all, and you're doing just fine. Macau is actually 3 islands, and they're all connected by bridges, and they lie off of lie outside of Zhuhai. They've got a lot of Portuguese history, and one of the things about that is they've got these little Portuguese tarts that are very popular in July. These little, about the size of this thing. And they're good. They're good. And he wants, we went with him to get some of these tarts in the old section of, that's one thing if you, when you know locals, they'll show you stuff that you'd never see. And so we went to the old section of Macau, and there were trees. They're like 300-400-year-old forever trees. These big tropical trees with all these limbs hanging down and stuff. And Robinson Crusoe style trees. And turn around the bend, and there's this little tiny hole in the wall little restaurant. They were serving these little pastries and bakeries. That's Macau for you. I will tell you that there are some amazing... Well, Jeff, I recommended that you go to the Venetian. You didn't tell me that you actually went to the Venetian, actually. The Venetian is awesome. I went there. Holy crap. It is just this... It's like it's a building the size of Disney World, okay? And it's like this... It's just amazing. It's like Venice, only inside of a building. And it's just really awesome. My opinions about casinos are pretty boring. You go there to have fun. You don't try to win any money. You go there to lose money. So, you know, you don't ever plan on winning anything. So you do small bets, and you play the one-armed bandits or whatever just for a little bit of time, and you eat the food and enjoy the time, but that's it. That's the secret of casinos. They got a bunch of casinos out there. I will tell you guys, to the audience here, if you want to have a nice, unusual vacation out of the mainstream, by all means, go to Macau, then take a trip to Zhuhai, and then to Hong Kong. There's enough color and life there to last you a century. So it's really good. But as far as the history of Macau goes, I'm under the impression, from what I understand, is that Macau was a Portuguese territory, while Hong Kong was a British territory, and that's my impression. And they were administrated completely different. And then when Macau became integrated back with China, and Hong Kong became back in China, the way that... China has integrated these two areas are very, very telling. They still have democratic elections in Macau, and they're the old school kind of elections. They're all on the local level, and anybody can run for election. I'm sure there are cabals of people that might try to form a political party, but I think it's mostly just local one-up elections, where the real power is in the casinos. So I get the impression that you've got the local elections running, the local politicians that make the local rules, all under the calm eyes of the mega oligarchs who run the casinos. So in the case of Macau, I don't think that Macau is really trying to gain control, or the oligarchs are trying to gain control of the people. They all have control of the money-making machine. Nobody's going to take that away. They just make sure that they have an environment where the people are satisfied. So they give them money, like I mentioned, and they're friendly and follow the dictates from the mainland. But aside from that, that's the same. Now, that's different in Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, under the British rule, the British treated Hong Kongese like a slave colony. They were really nasty to the subjects there, and their control lasted up until the American Color Revolutions in 2019, where they tried to create revolutions, pro-democracy revolutions, all kind of nonsense like that. They failed, and a bunch of CIA and NED, non-government organizations, NGOs, were suffered the consequences of going up against China. It was that way. Some of them will never see the light of day. So China has integrated Hong Kong differently. And the only reason why Hong Kong put up a bigger fight was because the British, the Five Eyes, put a shitload, absolutely bushels and bushels of, call them agents, saboteurs, call them what you were, they're just plants. And these people were designed to control, use Hong Kong as some kind of a battering ram against China. And they were all ignited in 2019 with the riots. You've probably seen a couple of videos about the riots and stuff. And there was reporting of this and that, but the real stuff that happened was underneath the surface. It's like an iceberg. You only see a portion of what's actually going on. And that's the truth. For instance, when young Joshua Wong, who was one of the leaders of the of the color revolution, he met with President Trump's people, and they had a couple of conversations, all on film. Chinese government had it all on film, recorded everything. And when Jimmy Lai, one of the financial backers, interesting cat, he ran these yellow rags, promoting sex and vices and all kinds of stuff. He had 600,000 subscribers, paying something like 50 cents. Yet somehow he ended up having something like $50 million. And that you could reconcile his business with the income that he had per year. Anyways, Jimmy Lai turned out to be a financial backing arm of the CIA or NED. And he isn't going to be seeing light for a long period of time. So these guys, Joshua Wong, Jimmy Lai, and a host of other people, tried to create something called a color revolution. It failed because China knew everything that was going on. And side note, if you think that Taiwan is different, you've got another thing coming. China knows everything that's going on in Taiwan. But that's another subject for another time. So anyways, so the difference has to do with the two nations. The Portuguese, how they administered Macau, British how they administered Hong Kong territories. Hong Kong territories, by the way, in case you don't know, it's not a single island. It's a group of islands. And administered differently, treated differently. And when they reintegrated back up into China, they reintegrated differently. Macau was easy peasy. China says, okay, rich oligarchs, you're making money in casinos. We'll allow you to do so. Just don't go up against us. Other than that, do your thing. Came to Hong Kong. China says, we're going to let you run your life, do your elections, do whatever you feel is necessary. We will support you. But you cannot ever, ever go up against us. Well, that's exactly what the Color Revolution tried to do. And after a couple of fits and starts, that was squashed. The funny thing about how the British ran Hong Kong was the fact that all the judges were British or Australian. Imagine you're a Chinese person living in a Chinese island as part of China, and you do something wrong, and there's a British judge looking at you saying, "Oh, I don't care. You hurt that little old lady and set her on fire. It's okay. Go ahead. You're just boys will be boys." Trying to put an end to that. And they ran home. Oh, my God. They ran home. They ran home fast. The first jet they could get on, they got the hell out of China. I exaggerate a little bit, but it's not too far from the truth, I'll tell you what. So, Hong Kong right now is unassailable. United States, Mike Pompeo, John Bolton, they shot their wads. Try to do it again in China. China will probably cut your dick off, tell you what. So, those areas are secure. And since they're secure right now, they're all part of the Pearl River Delta. No games, no more playing around. And that's what I need to say about that. So, yeah, I think that if you have an opportunity to go to either Hong Kong or Macau, go to both, okay? They are different. They have a different flavor to each other. Yes, they speak Chinese in both of them. Hong Kong speaks a lot of Cantonese, and with a lot of English words. Macau, they'll speak Cantonese with a lot of Portuguese words. It's got a totally different flavor, and you'll see signs in Portuguese and Chinese over, and they're the old style language. So it's really very interesting. If you want a little vacation, really, Macau is just a real nice place to go. It really is. I'm not bad-mouthing Hong Kong at all. I happen to like Tim So Sui and Mong Kok and some of these other areas in Hong Kong. I like the color, the life, these little alleyways with surprises at every turn. I really, really do. I really, really enjoy this area. There's got life to it, and there's a lot of international cuisines. And I'm a foodie, guys. I'm a foodie, and you will eat well in Hong Kong. I'll tell you what. So, and the best thing to do in Hong Kong is, of course, you know, the subway. So, my God, it takes you anywhere. Subways will take you anywhere. That's for a fact. Anyways, I'm sorry. I'm getting a little off on the track again. Sorry about that, Jeff. Sorry.
Question 4. What is your sense of the zeitgeist in the Pac Rim, the Pacific Rim, with North Korea, South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, and the Philippines?
You know, about the zeitgeist and everything going on right now in the Asian Pacific, I got to tell you, this has been an amazing year, dragon year, amazing year, lots and lots of changes. I cannot tell you specifically what's going to happen because I don't have a crystal ball. But the impression that I get is China's on the rise, the West, all of the West, is on the decline. Leaving their acquired territories, South Korea, Japan, the Philippines, even Taiwan, their acquired territories, out on a limb. Latest events on the military side, geopolitical side, economic side, and everything suggests that in a military confrontation, the United States and Western allies are at a substantive disadvantage. And China is in no mood to play. Those days of being nice are over. If you try to mess with China, China will bitch slap you. China will do some nasty stuff. So, in the events of the Philippines, and probably a lot of your readers aren't aware of the ongoing provocations by the Biden administration using cat's paw Philippines to provoke China, whether it's fishing boats or this junk piece of crap on a beached lagoon, or these transporting arms and munitions and trying to take over another reef. All these things, China has adroitly suppressed them. But China is getting increasingly emboldened and increasingly angry. So, have you ever gone to an animal's cage? You see a tiger, he's pacing back and forth. And your little kid wants to take a stick and he wants to poke him. You see the little kid and you go, no, don't poke the lion. Don't poke the tiger. That's the state right now. Because China is this close from just sinking ships. Okay? So you don't want to do that. And I think that there is this heightened awareness on all these being abandoned outposts, American, European outposts, whether it's Japan, Okinawa, Taiwan, the Philippines, South Korea. They're American outposts. Let's not lie about it. They're American outposts. But they're going to be left in the lurch. America will say all kinds of stuff. The United States president will make all these promises and everything. But the America cannot deliver. Ask Colonel McGregor. He's very good on the European front. He knows his stuff on nuclear weapons. He doesn't know that much on the Pacific front. Or Jack Ritter. Mr. Ritter. He's very, very good, but doesn't really quite understand about the Pacific Rim. But I will tell you, even then, all these people are beginning to realize, all the people are beginning to realize that China's a nice, polite, they really want prosperity, but they're only going to take being picked on so long before they just take their big paw and just go whap, and it's over. It's not a bandage that goes on a little cut. It's what are you going to do when half your face is removed? Okay? It's going to be that serious. And that's a good thing that, you know, right now the Biden administration, they have no idea. They have no idea. They are completely delusional. Same thing with the EU. Completely delusional. Van der Asselish or whatever her name is, completely delusional. Doesn't understand the colossus, the gigantic megalopolis that China has become. And they have no idea the consequences when a snotty-nosed six-year-old goes up against 100 drug-inspired bikers. Okay? So, it's completely one-sided, it's completely lopsided. And so, my overall feeling, and I'll break it down. South Korea is an American territory without the name. Okay? People, they've adopted the progressive mantra of the United States because the media is controlled by the United States, the military is controlled by the United States, and the trade is influenced by the United States. With the withdrawal of American support in that region, they are now dangling between Russia, North Korea, and China, and Japan does not look too friendly at them either. They are not going to do anything. Probably, if I were to look at a crystal ball, I would say 10 to 15 years from now, maybe 12 years from now, America might will slip out under the color of the darkness of the night like it did in Afghanistan. That's my feeling at this snapshot in time. Japan? Japan, it's got crazy people. United States can still manipulate oligarchs and crazy people. But Japan doesn't have ability. Unless the United States gives it ability. And I don't think the United States can give it anything more than promises. I anticipate some choppy waters up ahead, but eventually they'll settle down. I don't anticipate anything more than that. Regardless of what they say. The Philippines is actually controlled by a group of families. I don't know, 15 families or so. And it's Marcos, bong bong, Marcos' time to rule. And he, of course, can't wait to get all the frozen billions and billions of dollars of assets in the United States. So he's doing whatever the United States wants. And the United States wants to provoke China. However, domestically, he's very unpopular. Once he came in power, all the graft and corruption came out of the woodwork, and it is just like night and day. As far if you're a regular person in the Philippines, it's like you went from okay regular life to holy shit, they're frisking me down for money here, money there. We can't live like this. Plus, of course, they're provoking China, so he's terribly unpopular right now. If there's were to be any conflict in the Philippines, I would attribute if there were to be any conflict in the Pacific Rim, I would attribute it to be directly associated with the Philippines. And United States is going to abandon first opportunity. There is no way Americans are going to die in the Philippines, and there's no way China is going to put the PLA on any islands in the Philippines. Maybe take over the Palawan. But that would be for shits and giggles. I see, after this period of time, if anybody pushes it, China's going to start seizing some territory and says, you can't do jack shit about it, and shut the fuck up. This is going to be like that. China, I said it many times, China does not play, but also China's enormous. China is absolutely enormous. People don't understand it. It is enormous. It is cutting edge. It is... they got fucking invisibility cloaks for its troops. Machine gun robot dogs. Search and destroy flying grenades. Rail guns. You guys don't know what the hell you're dealing with. China does not play. They'll neutron bomb a couple of cities and then scour the countryside with flying robots. You don't know what you're dealing with. So that's kind of how I see things going to happen. So the next 5 years, maybe 8 years, still dicey in the Pacific, but I don't see any real serious outbreaks of war. If a serious outbreak of war would happen and involves China, it will be a war. And Lord help everybody in that area. Wars are nothing to sneeze at. Ukraine is a police action, not a war. Okay? China does wars. So don't mess around with China. I hate talking about war. So what I'm trying to say here is future looks bright in the Pacific realm. But I see the American and Western influences pulling out of necessity. So peace will return. But, that's kind of what I'm thinking. Huh?
Question 5. I read some of your comments on Quora where you are ranked as one of the top experts on China. What do the kind of questions you get tell you about the general understanding of China and the Chinese people? Do you think the people asking these questions are Westerners, Asians, mainland Chinese? Do you think that they are sincere, or are they just fishing to get a reaction out of the people who respond like you do?
I am. I am rated as, for the longest time, as the top or one of the top China experts on Quora. It makes my day. You're rated as an expert, or by popularity, I guess. there's some very, very good other people there. But in regards to the platform, it's very, very interesting. One thing I like about Quora, it was recommended to me. I didn't contribute on it for the longest time because of bad experiences I had. I used to contribute on a platform called Free Republic. I was on there for 20-some years. I was one of their top contributors. And then when I wrote a piece about the Hong Kong revolution, or the color revolution, and the CIA's background on it, and went into all kinds of detail, they banned me and erased everything I did. I had in 20 years, you have, 40,000 articles or whatever like that. It's just this ungodly amount. And I was erased. I was erased on Tumblr for posting things. Shadow banned and blocked on a lot of my YouTube videos. People say, holy shit, I found your YouTube. It's got great content. You're probably one of the best on the whole, in the entire platform. And you've only got 32 subscribers? Yeah, something funny is going on with that. The thing about YouTube is it'll say that I'll get 8 comments, for instance. And it'll show only 1 comment. The other ones won't show up. It'll say that I'll have 16 likes, but only 8 views. Just really weird. I once posted something that was talked about the Chinese military, and 1 hour after I posted it, I got 6 thumbs down, yet only viewed by 1 person. So something really weird's going on. So social media itself is, I don't want to say a crapshoot. I think it has turned into something different than what it is. For instance, I like to paint. I really like to paint. I paint figurative oils. I used to, anyways. And I'm a nice amateur artist. And I paint people that look like people, okay? And I do it in oils. I use the academicism technique, and I like to point in the orientalist style. Those of you who know art and know what that is. So, and that being said, I noticed that since I like to paint using these colors and using this style, that that I go ahead and use venues to do this. Well, all it takes is just one person who has the ability to press a button to erase everything you've done. And you've seen the kinds of people after Elon Musk took over Twitter. He fired how many hundreds of thousands of engineers who were just policing what people had to say. Supposedly in the United States, you have the freedom of speech. You don't police freedom of speech. So I don't know what the fuck he was trying to do or what they were trying to do. The point is, it's become something different. So when it comes to art, as a traditionalist, I like to see paintings that look nice. Sort of like Norman Rockwell. Norman Rockwell did great illustrations, okay? Beautiful art, but being replaced by what I would call garbage art, like Pollock, where somebody just drips paint on a canvas or a piece of shit in a jar, stuff like that. And for the longest time, I was thinking, what the hell is going on? Why are people buying, why are they paying millions of dollars for this? Why even $2? Why are they paying money for this junk? And it's just money laundering. Oligarchs, wealthy people, use art as a way of laundering money because there's no criteria on beauty as value. Value is what you pay for it. So you give this artist $1 million. He gives most of the money to another guy, and he gets a transfer fee. That's the art world for you. And thus, I think it's the same thing what's going on in social media. Social media is something else, but it's not that. We like to think that we can communicate ideas and free discourse. And it was back in 1993, 1994. It's not anymore. So when I came across Quora, I was a little bit hesitant. But then I saw something. And Quora allows the contributor to police the comments and how it's portrayed. Now, there are trolls. Trolls are... can be a six-year-old kid that's got nothing on their hands and they just mess up chat rooms and comment sections. But there's also professional trolls and bots and things that just go there to put contrary ideas there. So you can write an article, for instance, espousing the benefits of an electric bicycle. Then an automated troll bot will come in, identify the subject matter, and say, but electric bicycles cause cancer, and then leave. Now, other social media allows these disruptive elements in your comment section, but Quora doesn't. As the author, I police them. And when these disrupt bots, red herring bots, or whatever bots appear, I delete them. I track them down to the source. And I've got some systems that enable me to find out who the hell they are, where they come from. A lot of times they come from farms. I can track down to the ISP. I can even locate some more specific geographic-wise. But then if it's in the city, I don't know which floor or which room it is. That's harder and it takes more work. But I can basically track down most of these. Adverse comments are just by either professional jackasses, robot bots, or trolls. I just delete them all. Because I've deleted all those things, I have clean dialogue. So I post something, and I post something that's interesting. You may not agree with it, but it's interesting. And all the piles of shit, the piles of vomit, and the garbage is cleaned out of the comment section. If you got something good and nice to say, you can comment. You try to throw some Rotten Tomatoes at me, and you get banned forever. And I'm on, I don't know, 35 spaces or something ridiculous like that. And you're banned on all of my spaces. So when I joined Quora, I started cleaning house. And I found these people. Lordy, lordy, lordy. It's something weird. You know, you're going to look through the profile. So here's this guy. He says, you don't know what you're talking about. Cut and paste. You don't know what you're talking about. Click. Find out who he is. Joined in 2015. zero answers, zero questions, zero friends, zero profile. But suddenly, out of the blue, he shows up online to say, you don't know what you're talking about. I just classify that as a non-person. Might be a troll, might be a real person, but it's a disruptive element. And that's the thing. There's people, they'll just go on over, they'll sign up, they'll get a thousand fake identities because social media allows you just to automate the entire sign-up process. And they'll get thousands and thousands of these fake accounts. And they put them in these troll farms. And their sole purpose is to take, if it's positive news about China, to throw in something negative in the comment. If you're talking about China, there's going to be a negative comment in there. And they'll go by different names out of the same location. Out of the same location, same building, in the same city, they'll have 20-some posts saying that I don't know what I'm talking about. Trollbots. So there's a lot of things that you do. You know, I have a web page, of course, and I used to have all these people, these trolls, and malcontents that come on up. I was like, why the fuck this guy, out of the blue, he's over there calling me names and saying all kinds of derogatory shit to me. I track him down to the ISP, then I go over and drill down to find out who he really is, because they often give fake emails and stuff. But, you know, you sign up for an email account, don't think you're anonymous, guys. You use a VPN, you sign up for an email account, you're not anonymous. Track down these jackasses. A lot of stuff out of Virginia, I'll tell you what, out of Georgia, too. Certain region in Georgia, somebody's making some bucks, or at least getting a lot of bucks for causing this disruptive behavior. So what I did on my webpage, I put stuff about food. So when these search bots troll social media, they're looking for your opinion about Trump or Biden or China, or what they're looking for this, and then they'll narrow down through text phrases in the article and assign certain disrupt bots to attack you. But if I have an article that's talking about how to make lasagna and the benefits of cheese selection, it just goes bloop and bypasses. So whenever I started putting recipes in my articles, My bot attacks went way down. The disruptive comments went way down. It's a sad state that we have to do this, but that's the reality. I'm sorry and sad to say. So, but yeah, I'm pretty popular on Quora. I have a couple of content. I talk about stuff. I'm in China. I talk about China. Also talk about military. It's a forte of mine. And I felt like I really had to do it because there is just a bunch of disinformation. It's almost like some America type, America, 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 comes on over and says, and I'm reading this stuff, Chinese are all conscripts and they're using hand-me-down Soviet weapons and China doesn't know how to fight war and China this and China this. Like, oh God. China's the oldest military in the world. They were fighting organized battles on large scales while Europeans were living in caves and picking lice off their hair. Okay? China has the oldest navy, the first and the oldest marines, and the first marines. All right? China was the first nation to come up with aerial bombardment. You don't mess with China, guys. So, I felt like I had to start contributing out of necessity. And I ended up getting a following that kind of actually astounds me. But you still have to fight. If it's not trolls and bots, and there's a lot of them, and there's an army of them, there you also have to fight just ne'er-to-wells. I'm going to call them ne'er-to-wells. They just disagree with you. And it's okay to disagree with me. but do it from a point of view of similar backgrounds. Somebody who's never gotten a passport and lives in Little Rock, Arkansas, is not going to have the same opinion as on Beijing as somebody who lives outside of Beijing. Okay, you have to balance things off. So if it's rude and disruptive, I get rid of it. And I don't care what your background is. So the way I can describe this, and the best way I can describe this, is imagine you're sitting down to eat. And Jeff, you know, come on. You know, we've eaten. We sat down. We have a nice conversation. We eat. We drink. We talk about stuff. It's fine. It's fine. It's good. But what if somebody comes on over and starts yelling and screaming at the table? They just start yelling and screaming. It's disruptive. Even though we're having a good, deep conversation, talking about things that matter to us, suddenly all you hear is this yelling, this vitriol, this screaming. That's what the comments section does, because after you read the article, the comments can color the memories of that article. That's something Obama alluded to way back. That you can have a favorable opinion or get an idea about an article, but as soon as you start reading the comments, you can get distracted. And the thoughts that you generate as reading that goes away. So you have to police your comments. So it's better to have one or two comments than ongoing flame wars in the comment section. That's what I have to say. And that's my core experience, as I have to say, huh? Well, Jeff, it's been good. It's been kind of long. I'm sorry that I spent a lot of time ranting on this. But maybe you picked a couple of nuggets out of my brain. I want to underscore again that I enjoyed a couple of the videos that you were on with some of these other players. And it always tickles me to see pictures of you with Pepe Escobar. He's one of my, he's one of the greats. You know, if you have an opportunity, I'd love to see you on the Duran. They're a bunch, I can't even pronounce their names, okay, but they're a bunch of great guys. And there's some other ones that you know about. I really appreciate everything you're doing, and thank you for letting me vent here a little bit on this stuff, and take care. I hope you're well and settled in Taiwan and enjoying some of that delicious, delicious food. And you know that. Take care, and thank you very much. Bye-bye.